Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, if you head up to Irvington, on North Broadway, there's a 34-room, 20,000-square-foot mansion that was the home to the first woman to become a self-made millionaire in the U.S. She went by Madam C.J. Walker, and the business that made her rich was hair care, specifically black hair care. When she died in 1919, her obituary in the New York Times read, and please do remember this is 1919, Mrs. C.J. Walker, known as New York's wealthiest negress, having accumulated a fortune from the sale of so-called anti-kink hair tonic and from real estate investments in the last 14 years, died yesterday morning at her country estate at Irvington on Hudson. She was the proprietor of the Madam Walker hairdressing parlors at 108 West 136th Street and other places in the city. Her death recalled the unusual story of how she rose in 12 years from a washwoman making only $1.50 a day to a position of wealth and influence among members of her race. Her life story is about to be told through a Netflix limited series called Self-Made. It's coming out next month, and it stars Academy Award winner Octavia Spencer as Walker, and our new friend of the show, Blair Underwood, plays her husband, as well as Tiffany Haddish playing her daughter. The series drops March 20th, but you can get a sneak peek on February 19th at the Woodlawn Cemetery, where Madam C.J. Walker is buried, and where there'll be a special screening and panel discussion that evening. Joining us now in studio are showrunners and executive producers Janine Sherman-Barwa and Elle Johnson, and executive producer Nicole Jefferson Asher. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So this is based off of a book by Walker's great-great-granddaughter, Alelia Bundles, who I, full disclosure, know, right? It's called On Her Own Ground. So this is the screen adaptation of her life story. What was it, Nicole, that you thought you really, you know, the biography's great, but that you could really accomplish visually that would help tell her story?
Well, one of the things that I love about Madam C.J. Walker was that she was a visionary, that she was ahead of her time. And I think that's why her story resonates to so many of us right now. So approaching the material, we really wanted to try to find a way to kind of break open the biopic. Mm-hmm. So we used a lot of kind of magic realism elements, interstitials, and, you know, looked at her life through a contemporary lens, mostly to really draw the bridge between her and now. I mean, she was a very modern woman, and she was someone that you know, struggled in 1910, but I think that when audiences today look at her and can see a lot of themselves. And so it was important really to bridge that gap, mm-hmm. to contemporize her story and to contextualize her story in history to understand what made her so incredible.
Yeah, there's great use of music, of modern music, mm-hmm. and there's flashbacks and dream sequences. It really takes you on sort of a trip with her as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, you know, the book came out 18 years ago. What are the challenges about getting films about Black history? What are some of the challenges in getting them made?
I think so often people
this
thought...
This is Janine, by the way.
This is Janine. I think people thought that people of color wouldn't come and watch and support period pieces, so they never made period pieces with Black people at the center. We would be in slave movies or slave miniseries, but, you know, something post-slavery about, you know, empowerment was hard to get done. They're very expensive to make. And they just thought, period, nobody will see it. But I think we, you know, with the support of Netflix and Warner Brothers, they were committed to telling this story and to telling a story about, you know, a woman getting a piece of the American pie and the American dream and dealing with hair, something that is such a provocative subject matter, even today.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this sort of the boom of streaming was also incredibly helpful, because you could do a limited series. It didn't have to be a TV show or a movie.
Right.
It's sort of right. And I'm curious, what do you think about, why does a limited series really work with her story?
Well, she has such a huge story, and it was one of the things that we really needed to do was to kind of focus in on the episodes of her life that would be the best way to tell her story. Mm-hmm. But also to be engaging and be something that wouldn't feel like homework. But the streaming space is so great because it's like doing a mini movie. basically. I mean, it's a 4-episode piece, and so it feels like there's an epic quality to it, but it's also very intimate. It's something that brings you into her life. So we wanted to kind of match both of those aspects of who Madame CJ was. She was this incredible woman, but somebody who'd lived an epic life, and it feels like that streaming space is a place where you can really go into it with characters.
Especially because streamers are more willing to play with format and time. They're not regimented like network has a certain amount of space that they have to fill and advertisers they have to cater to.
Commercials.
Netflix has some series that are 4 episodes, some that are 10 episodes, some that go multiple seasons. So I think that what's really exciting as from a storytelling point of view is that we're no longer limited in telling a certain story a certain way, and I think that, again, that's really what we were trying to explore with Self-Made, that within these 4 hours, you know, which is twice of what you would have for a movie, what we could say about this incredible woman and her incredible life.
So one of the themes you wanted to follow clearly was just her genius as a businesswoman. What do you think was her genius? Having spent all this time, was it sales? Was it just that innate belief in herself?
I think it was her resilience. I mean, I think she had the innate belief that she was born for greatness. And I think people who feel that inside go after their dreams, you know, regardless of what's in their way. And I think in 1910, for somebody, a woman, a black woman, to say, I want a piece of the American dream, I want to make other women, you know, entrepreneurs, I want to bring up a group of people, I want black people to have a better position in society, I think that was huge. But she was not looking at the things that were keeping her back. She was saying, I'm going to go forward.
She also really personalized her sales. I mean, she infused her sales pitch with her story so that women could really identify with it. She also had a product that really worked. I mean, that helped in a time when there was a lot of snake oil salesmen.
She had nothing
on the market. She had something that people really needed that actually worked, and she was honest about her struggles with her hair, that she had lost her hair and how this had helped her. And I think that that personalization really sold people, particularly, you know, people who had lost their hair as well. But it ended up helping a great many more people.
Which was very common for white, black, you know, again, this is a time when people, no one had indoor plumbing in their houses. And and so just washing and doing your hair was an ordeal. Just also to jump on that, I do think that she was a brilliant marketer, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was putting her face. She put her face on her tins.
Before Oprah.
Right? Exactly. Very early on and in all of her ads. And, she had a very distinct aesthetic and colors. And, you know, you could definitely spot a Madame C.J. Walker employee from across the room.
Right. She trained them. You had to go through Madame C.J. Walker training.
And this is a woman who did not go to school. She had to teach herself how to read. She was born 2 years after the Civil War on a plantation. Mm. So it's not like she went to Harvard Business School to learn this.
Right. But she saw other people like Carnegie and Rockefeller, and she said, if they can do it, I can do it too, which is huge.
I also liked how, though, she would she traveled around the country, but she'd go into a town to sell her product, and then she would kind of pick out the woman who seemed the most enthusiastic, the person who was most engaging, and enlist that person to become a salesperson for her. And I think that, you know, kind of localizing it really helped her as well. She was smart about that.
My guests are Nicole Jefferson Asher, Janine Sherman Barois, and Elle Johnson. We're talking about Self-Made. It is going to be on Netflix. It's about the life of Madame C.J. Walker. The series is very smart and clever in, I watched the whole thing, dealing with racism and intra-racism and colorism. I mean, in a really very direct and I think understandable way for someone who maybe doesn't understand those things.
Right. Yes.
I'm curious about the conversations that you had with your screenwriters and with your actors when you want to talk about those things, because those things can get sensitive.
We're the screenwriters.
We are the screenwriters.
Lots of tears.
Yes.
I mean, but I think at the end of the day, this is a story about beauty and a story about a woman who created basically the modern beauty empire. So we felt that if we're looking at beauty from a Black point of view, that we had to talk about colorism. Mm-hmm. It's completely inescapable. It's not exclusive to Black. I mean, every culture has their issues with skin color and, you know, hierarchy. So so I think that's one of the things that makes it so relatable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's shocking how little conversation there's been about it.
And it's also shocking how even today people don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, don't air that dirty laundry. And the minute somebody says something like that to me, it's like, oh, that's what I'm writing about. That is where the heat is. Yes. And that obviously is something that we need to be talking about. But I think, you know, within our room and amongst the three of us, we had to have really candid conversations and to go there for ourselves so that, you know, you can do something that's true. I mean, Nicole and I were up in Toronto on set, and we had a moment, an incident where, I mean, I'm a lighter-skinned Black woman,
and
Nicole,
I'm a darker-skinned Black woman.
And there were some issues with some of the things that were in the script that, you know, we just had to have an honest conversation that ended in a lot of tears. But we had to have that conversation in order to make it real and true. And, you know, we did.
You can tell the work went into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can tell work went into it.
Method writing.
Without giving too much away, in the course of the film, we see Madam C.J. Walker, and she, as she interacts with Booker T. Washington, she gets all up in his face. It's great. W.E.B. Du Bois. So if you could explain to our listeners just like where she figured into sort of influencers, I guess, of that time in terms of and how big a deal was her gender? If she was,
I think her gender was huge. I mean, I think this is post-slavery. Booker T. Washington saw a route in which Black people could get a better station in life. W.E.B. Du Bois saw a different route as well, and they were sometimes at heads about their positions and how we were going to achieve greatness. And then there was Madam C.J., who wanted a piece of the American dream, but there was definitely a feeling that Black men would be, I guess,
needed to be put forward,
especially coming out of slavery. And so for Madam C.J. to actually say that Black women, actually, the Black household will only flourish if both people get uplifted, was very, very forward in its thinking, and it challenged the system. So sometimes you can look back at it and you can say, was Booker T. Washington sexist, or was he a product of the time? And he was trying to figure out how we were going to move forward in the society the way it was. But her gender was an issue, and the role of women. And you see that in her dynamic with CJ. I mean, CJ is her husband, and he loved her and he adored her, but he had never seen someone who was going to, a female that was going to be the breadwinner and that was going to surpass him. And you see that dynamic play out on screen, and it's heartbreaking because he doesn't have the words to articulate what is happening.
And she repeatedly refers to it as my company.
Yes.
My company. My company.
Right. Yes.
At a time when women didn't have the vote.
Right.
At a time when, the men were absolutely considered the breadwinners, the heads of the households, and women were expected to, you know, stay quiet and barefoot and pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Stay in the place.
Mm-hmm. She was groundbreaking in that way. And I wanted to also talk about just the larger cultural context of, what's very interesting about Madam C.J. Walker. Once she became affluent, she still had a commitment to uplifting her people and bringing people up with her. Mm-hmm. And as a result, that enabled her to, you know, travel in the same circles as people like Du Bois and Booker and be considered a great thinker along with them. She was very politically active. And unlike some of the other great thinkers, she actually had the money to be able to support causes and to be able to make change and to be able to help other people provide their vision. So, I mean, we weren't even able to really include all of the people that she was friends with, Marcus Garvey, Mary McLeod Bethune, mm-hmm. Ida B. Wells. I mean, because she was part of this large, very organized, very politically active, very woke, group of Black people post-slavery that were really trying to forge a new identity and find their way in America.
I'm so curious about your research into the hairstyles and the clothing and all that. It was because it's such, I mean, like to your point that it's a period piece, everything has to be really on point. Mm-hmm. What was your research process like as you were writing?
Woo!
daunting. Huge, daunting. Yeah. We did a lot of research. I mean, obviously, we had Alelia Bundle's book to go off of, which was an incredible resource. And there's a lot of material about Madam CJ out there, but we did, we did look for beauty ads. We did try to get a better sense of what was in the world of beauty that Madam CJ would have seen and drawn on and how she improved upon all of that, and just finding actual, photographs of the original things. That was really helpful in terms of getting a better sense of how what people really thought about beauty at that time, and the skin bleaches or skin lighteners, and trying to find photographs of actual hairstyles from the period, which we discovered when we looked back. There were some incredible hairstyles even back then. It's not as traditional as you would think, that there were some really revolutionary hairstyles going on, and we really tried to incorporate that and use that.
What did New York mean for Madam C.J. Walker?
I think it meant she arrived. She really, she was born in Delta, Louisiana, again, on a plantation, and everyone in her family was a slave except for her. And from there, she moved to St. Louis, and she really started to become herself in St. Louis and spent a good amount of time. Once she got her business going, she moved to Denver and Indianapolis. And in Indianapolis, she was able to build her own factory and manufacture her own goods. And so she spent her final years in New York. She actually was able to build a mansion down the street from Rockefeller and some of the, the biggest, titans of the day. She was the only Black person that lived in the area. And, she did that very consciously. She, she wanted not just to be amongst them for herself, but she wanted to show that that is where Black people could be.
And she also built what came to be known as Dark Tower. I mean, her daughter, Lilia, came to Harlem and opened a salon that would then become like a hub for the Harlem Renaissance. Mm-hmm. But coming to New York was coming to compete with like the Helena Rubinsteins, these other
Elizabeth Arden.
Mm-hmm. And she was competing, or rather providing an option for Black women at a time when there wasn't really one.
And I think that New York has always represented forward thinking, and for someone from the South, she knew if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. And that's what she did. When she came to Harlem, she saw Black people were ahead. They were forward thinking. They were traveling around the world. They were not stuck in a way of a belief system. They were expanding their horizons, and there was a support system for them to do it. The NAACP was so active here, and so it was beyond just like, oh, could she make it as a business person here? It was that there was something happening within the culture of New York that was aspirational.
And allowed her to flourish.
Yes.
You could really be yourself.
The name of the series is Self-Made. It is about the life of Madam C.J. Walker. It drops on Netflix on March 20th. There's that event at Woodlawn Cemetery on February 19th. Janine Sherman, Barois, Elle Johnson, and Nicole Jefferson Asher, congratulations and thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
This is All of It.